जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, जमुना तीर वनचारी, जमुना तीर वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, 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 जमुना तीर वनचारी, जमुना तीर वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव राधा माधव राधे, Shaya Panchatattva, 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 Shaya Panchatattva. Jai Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada.
Jai Om Shabbat, Paramahamsa, Paravirat, Kacharya, Sotra, Sata, Sri Shimad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Swami Shri Prabhupada, keep. His calm beauty found to cherish the Prabhupada ki. Samveda Gaura Bhakta Vrindaki. Grantharashmad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Shri Adamata Mayapachanda Sakavindaki. Shri Shri Pancharatva Bhagavan ki. Shri Pralladana Vishinga Devi ki. Gaura Brahmanandi. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishnam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gura Shri Yudha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindha Dina Bandha Jagatpade Govesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 7, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb, and the first verse. Shri Narada Vacha Evam Daitya Sutai Prishto Evam Daitya Sutai Prishto Maha Bhagavato Suraha Maha Bhagavato Suraha Uvacha Tan Smayamanaha Uvacha Tan Smayamana Smaran Mad Anubhashitam Smaran Mad Anubhashitam Shri Narada Uvacha Evam Daitya Sutai Prishto Mahabhagavato Suraha Uvachatansma Yamana Smaran Madhan Ubhashitam Shri Narada Uvacha Evam Daitya Sutai Prishto Mahabhagavato Suraha Uvachatansma Yamanas Smaran Madhanubhashitam Shri Narada Uvacha एवं दैत्यसुतै पृष्टो महाभागवतो सुरः उवाच तन्स्मायमानास् स्मरन्मदनुभाषिताम् श्रीनारद उवाच एवं दैत्यासुतै पृष्ट महाभागवतो सुरः स्मरन् पदनुभाषितम् श्रीनारद उवाच एवं दैत्यसुतै पृष्ट महाभागवतो सुरः उवाच तं स्मायमानः स्मरन्मदनुभाषितम् श्रीनारद उवाच एवं दैत्यसुतै पृष्ट महाभागवतो सुरः उवाच तान् स्मायमाना स्मरन्मदनुभाषितम् श्रीनारद उवाच एवं दैत्यसुतै पृष्ट महाभागवतो सुरः उवाच तान् स्मायमाना स्मरन्मदनुभाषितम् श्रीनारद उवाच एवं दैत्यसुतै पृष्ट महाभागवतो सुरः उवाच तन् स्मायमाना स्मरन्मदनुभाषितम् श्रीनारद उवाच
The great Saint Narad Muni said,
Evam,
thus,
Daityasutai,
by the sons of the demons,
Prishtaha,
being questioned,
Mahabhagavata,
the exalted devotee of the Lord,
Asuraha,
born in a family of demons,
Uvacha,
spoke,
Tan,
unto them,
the sons of the demons,
Smayamanaha,
smiling,
Smaran,
remembering,
Mat Anubhashitam,
what was spoken by me.
Translation of purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Narad Muni said, although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of asuras, he was the greatest of all devotees. Having thus been questioned by his class friends, the sons of the asuras, he remembered the words spoken to him by me and replied to his friends as follows. Please repeat. Narad Muni said, although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of asuras, he was the greatest of all devotees. Having thus been questioned by his class friends,
the sons of the asuras,
he remembered the words spoken to him by me and replied to his friends as follows.
Report.
When he was in the womb of his mother, Prahlad Maharaj listened to the words of Narad Muni. One cannot imagine how the baby in embryo could hear Narada, but this is spiritual life. Progress in spiritual life cannot be obstructed by any material condition. This is called ahaituk ya pratihata,
Reception of spiritual knowledge is never checked by any material condition. Thus, Prahlad Maharaj, from his very childhood, spoke spiritual knowledge to his class friends, and certainly it was effective, although all of them were children. Let's read the chapter summary. Chapter 7, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb. In this chapter, to dissipate the doubts of his class friends, the sons of the demons, Prahlad Maharaj states how, within the womb of his mother, he had heard from the mouth of Narad Muni, who had instructed him in Bhagavad Dharma. When Hiranyakashipu left his kingdom and went to the mountain known as Mandarachala to execute severe austerities, all the demons scattered. Hiranyakashipu's wife, Gayadhu, was pregnant at that time, and the demigods, mistakenly thinking that she carried another demon in her womb, arrested her. Their plan was that as soon as a child took birth, they would kill him. While they were taking Gayadhu to the heavenly planets, they met Narad Muni, who stopped them from taking her away and took her to his ashram until Hiranyakashipu's return. In Narad Muni's ashram, Gayadhu prayed for the protection of the baby in her womb, and Narad Muni reassured her and gave her instructions on spiritual knowledge. Taking advantage of those instructions, Prahlad Maharaj, although a small baby within the womb, listened very carefully. The spirit soul is always apart from the material body. There is no change in the spiritual form of the living entity. Any person above the bodily conception of life is pure and can receive transcendental knowledge. This transcendental knowledge is devotional service. And Prahlad Maharaj, while living in the womb of his mother, received instructions in devotional service from Narad Muni. Any person engaged in the service of the Lord through the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master is immediately liberated. And being free from the clutches of Maya, he is relieved of all ignorance and material desires. The duty of everyone is to take shelter of the Supreme Lord and thus become free from all material desires. Regardless of the material condition in which one is situated, one can achieve this perfection. Devotional service is not dependent on the material activities of austerity, penance, mystic yoga, or piety. Even without such assets, one can achieve devotional service through the mercy of a pure devotee.
Srinarada uvacha evam daitya sutai prishto mahabhagavato suraha uvacha tansmai yamana smaran mad anubhashitam.
Narad Muni said, although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of asuras, he was the greatest of all devotees. Having thus been questioned by his class friends, the sons of the asuras, he remembered the words spoken to him by me and replied to his friends as follows. This is a very instructive section of Srimad Bhagavatam, which we've been studying for the last few months, leading up to the appearance of Lord Nrsingadev. And I think particularly for us here, these are especially relevant because we have Prahlad downstairs on the altar in front of Nrsingadev, the same Prahlad who has spoken all these verses and given us so much transcendental knowledge, both here through teaching his school friends and later on in offering prayers to Lord Nrsingadev. There are very many famous shlokas of Srimad Bhagavatam contained in these chapters. And Prahlad Maharaj is right there downstairs praying to Lord Nrsingadev, as he will be doing later on in this canto. So it's a nice meditation when we take darshan of Nrsingadev and Prahlad Maharaj, we can remember that Prahlad Maharaj has given us so much valuable instruction in these chapters. In the last chapter, the first verse of the last chapter is quite a famous shloka. When Prahlad starts to instruct his classmates, Komara acharet prakyo dharman bhagavataniha durlabham manusham janma tadapyadhruvam arthadam. So that's one of the most famous verses spoken by Prahlad, saying that spiritual life should be cultivated from the very beginning, from the Kumar age. So Prahlad now is approximately 5 years old, so presumably his classmates are also of the same age. So we can see even in previous yugas, this was the time for education. Even today, generally, children go to school by the age of 4 or 5. So this is a tradition going on for many yugas, even Prahlad Maharaj's time. Up to 5 years of age, the children are supposed to be given a lot of love, pampering, attention, and minimal discipline. But once they become 5 and ready for school, then the discipline and instruction, study has to become the focus.
So Prahlad Maharaj is reminding his classmates that the real education, importance, the real value of the human form of life can be obtained through the spiritual education.
Dharman Bhagavataniha.
Because the human form of life is so rare, therefore it should not be wasted. And in the previous chapter he goes through the various stages of life, how people waste their time in childhood, they waste their time playing, they get a little older, they waste their time studying material subjects, then they waste their time earning money in family life, and in old age they waste their time in lamentation or reminiscing of their youthful bygone days. In this way, people expend the whole sum of their lifetime without remembering Krishna or taking up devotional service. Because this is a very common misconception. People think that spiritual life is for the elderly people, they're approaching death, therefore they have to worship God to get relief from their suffering or to ensure their next life is something auspicious. But it's not so simple. One has to practice this spiritual knowledge throughout one's lifetime, and that's what Prahlad is teaching in the previous chapter. So now the students of Prahlad, the classmates of Prahlad, who are actually now his students also, they are questioning him, how did you learn all this transcendental knowledge? You know, you're the son of the king, the greatest of the demons, you lived your whole life sheltered. Where did you get opportunity to hear from Narad Muni all this transcendental knowledge? So Prahlad Maharaj is going to explain to them the history of his exposure to the teachings of Narad Muni. And so a very valid question. The students were a little bit doubtful how Narad could ever have come close to Prahlad and given him all this knowledge, which is totally against whatever the demons stand for. The demoniac education they're receiving from Shandanamarka and the culture of the asuras led by Hiranyakashipu is totally opposite to what Prahlad is teaching his school friends, and therefore Hiranyakashipu was so angry to hear this. So Prabhupada in the purport he talks about how Prahlad got these instructions while within the womb of his mother, and Prabhupada states that it's hard to even imagine how this could happen, but progress in spiritual life cannot be obstructed by any material condition. So Prahlad is encouraging his friends of the same age that you should take up Krishna consciousness now. But actually Krishna consciousness should be taken up even long before the age of 5. For the Grihastha, when they're planning to have a child, there are so many considerations and so many samskaras to be performed. And having performed those samskaras, then one will attract a soul who will be receptive to Krishna consciousness at the age of 5. So the students, they're already been born into demoniac families. They have certain nature, certain tendencies, certain karma they're bringing from their previous births. Naturally not very good, because otherwise they wouldn't have been born in the demoniac families. But they have to start at least from the age of 5. But for those who have this knowledge prior, then it behooves us that before even conception, one has to purify oneself. Husband and wife have many different kinds of meditation, contemplation, what kind of child they want to bring into the world, how to make the house stable and good atmosphere, and getting blessings of the spiritual master, choosing auspicious times for the different ceremonies. So many different considerations are there to be able to attract a soul into one's family who will be Krishna conscious. People are, every day, there are hundreds, thousands, millions of creatures, living entities being born in different bodies, and many hundreds of thousands of humans also being born. But most of them are simply born by so-called, you know, just by the combination of male and female union, the woman may get pregnant and give birth to a child. But generally, most people are not planning this, sometimes they don't even want to have the child.
And therefore, so many sinful activities have been committed, like abortion, contraception. You know, Prabhupada spoke out very strongly against artificial means of controlling birth. But because people are not planning to have a proper child, especially a Krishna conscious child, then most of the population who are born are, as Prabhupada would say, they're born like cats and dogs. So they're born infected with modes of rajagun, tamagun, modes of passion and ignorance, and therefore their activities are also similarly in the modes of passion and ignorance. So unless one performs these samskaras, then the child born to one will be necessarily contaminated by passion and ignorance. Now, this is very easy to understand, very logical. Then the question may come, how is it that Prahlad Maharaj, who is the son of Hiranyakashipu, who is a sworn enemy of the Lord from his very beginning of his life, how is it that he is such a great devotee? Is it just from hearing in the womb, or is there some previous history also to Prahlad Maharaj? So I haven't been here for some time, and I'm not sure if this story has already been told, but I want to just touch on that. What is the previous history of Prahlad, or rather the history of Prahlad's conception? Because naturally we would think, and this is actually a big paradox, even in this verse it says he was born in the family of asuras, but he was the greatest of devotees. So how is that possible? Generally, someone who is in a demoniac family should have demoniac tendencies. Someone born in a divine family should have divine tendencies. So if there's some mismatch, then there must be some explanation. So in this case, Hiranyakashipu had gone to perform austerities. Not the same time that Lord Brahma came to him and offered him all the benedictions. The previous occasion, Hiranyakashipu had also gone to propitiate Lord Brahma. But in that time he was unsuccessful. And that was because, and this is described in Nrisimha Purana, I believe, the demigods, especially Lord Brahma, were very perturbed by Hiranyakashipu's plan, because they knew he was up to no good. So they were trying to, and Lord Brahma was trying to figure out how we can break Hiranyakashipu's meditation. So at that time, Narad Muni came to visit Lord Brahma, and he saw that Lord Brahma was looking a bit troubled. So Lord Brahma explained, yes, this demon Hiranyakashipu is performing these severe austerities, and he's going to want all sorts of benedictions from me. He's going to disturb the order of the universe. So I'm trying to figure out what to do about this. So Narad Muni said, don't worry, leave it to me. Actually, Narad Muni, his footprints and his hand is throughout this entire pastime. This verse today is also spoken by Narad Muni, because he's relating this entire episode to Yudhishthira Maharaj in the assembly of the Rajasuya Yajna. So anyhow, Narad Muni and his friend, Parvat Muni, they're two very close friends, they took the form of little birds, and they went to the place where Hiranyakashipu was performing his austerities. And they started chanting, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya. And Hiranyakashipu was there trying to concentrate during his meditation to satisfy Lord Brahma. And then he's hearing this chirping sound, Om Namo Narayanaya. And immediately he's angered. Why? Because Narayan, Lord Vishnu, is the one who killed his brother Hiranyaksha in the form of Varaha. So Hiranyakashipu is a sworn enemy of Lord Narayan. So when he hears Lord Narayan's name being chanted, Lord Narayan being worshipped, Om Namo Narayanaya, I offer my obeisances to Lord Narayan, then immediately he's angry, and he takes his bow and arrow to shoot the birds. But Narad Muni and Parvat Muni immediately fly away and disappear, and Hiranyakashipu cannot harm them. So in that angry mood, his meditation was broken. So he abandoned his attempts at that time, and he went back to his palace. There his wife Kayadu greeted him, and she was very surprised that, oh my lord, you had gone to perform austerities and you're back so quickly, what happened? So then he related the story to her, how these creatures were disturbing his meditation by chanting Om Namo Narayan, Narayanaya. So in that consciousness he had union with Kayadhu, and it says that even when he was in the act, he was still couldn't get this Om Namo Narayanaya out of his mind. So in that consciousness, he conceived Prahlad. And therefore, Prahlad was, right from that moment, was inclined to the Lord Vishnu, because his father was meditating on Narayan and chanting Om Namo Narayanaya in his mind. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, he was automatically a great devotee of the Lord. And that was further cultivated by Narad Muni when he was within the womb. As we'll see in the upcoming verses, we know the story how when Hiranyakashipu next time went to perform austerities, then the demigods attacked the demon's kingdom and they captured Gayadhu, thinking that her child is a great demon. Naturally, one would expect the son of Hiranyakashipu to be also of the same quality. So their idea was, well, we can't do much to Hiranyakashipu now, but at least we can safeguard the future. If we kill his son when the son is born, then at least we won't have to worry about another demon in the future. But Narad Muni again came there, stopped them, and said, no, actually this child is a great devotee. You don't disturb Gayadhu. And he took her under his shelter and gave her the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, Bhagavad Dharma, while Prahlad was still within the womb. And Prahlad absorbed that knowledge, and now he is repeating it to his classmates. So how the child should be trained in Krishna consciousness is a very scientific process, and the different samskaras are there from before conception, and the several samskaras are there during the conception, during the pregnancy, at different stages, to encourage the child in Krishna consciousness. So when the child is born, then he will naturally be attracted to Krishna. In the third canto of Bhagavatam, there is a very detailed description in the 31st chapter of the third canto, when Kapiladeva is instructing his mother, is to describe the movements of the living entities. And there is very scientifically, verse by verse, given how the embryo develops from different sizes and different stages of consciousness, and how the limbs and the different organs develop. And it's stated there that although the living entity within the womb, the child within the womb, is in a very uncomfortable, precarious situation, and constantly being bitten by different worms and constantly affected by whatever the mother does. If the mother eats some spicy food, then the unborn child is burned and scalded by those foods. And if the mother, what to speak if the mother is committing some heavy sinful activities such as smoking, drinking alcohol, taking drugs. Even science has proven that these kinds of things are very harmful to the embryo. So the expectant mothers are always told, don't drink alcohol, definitely don't smoke, don't be stressed out. There's a whole science of how the mother during pregnancy should conduct herself and be free of stress. So despite that, even if all precaution is taken, the child within the womb is in a very uncomfortable, cramped situation, being bitten, being affected by whatever the mother eats. But if the child is fortunate in that condition, then he's able to remember his past lifetimes and is able to actually offer prayers to the Lord. And there's a very interesting set of prayers in that chapter which describe how the living entity in the womb is praying to the Supreme Lord. Whereas generally we consider that the embryo has very limited perception, very limited faculties. But at least some fortunate souls are able to pray very feelingly to the Lord, and they pray for deliverance from that condition. But unfortunately, when the birth takes place, the pressure and the pain of childbirth, not just for the mother, but for the child also, erases their memory of these prayers to the Lord, and therefore they're born in apparent ignorance. So that chapter, the first verse of that chapter, 331.1, it's also a very famous shloka. Karmana daiva netrena jantur deho papattaye striya pravishtu udaram pumsareta kanashtaya. So as I was saying, it's a very scientific process. So in that verse, directly Lokapiladev says that daiva netrena, karmana daiva netrena, by one's karma and by the superior By the divine superintendence, Daiva Netrena, the living entity is placed into a certain womb through the semen of the man. So who takes birth in which family, with what kind of mentality, what kind of karma, these things are all very scientifically prescribed. It's not by chance, random accident, that someone is born in a certain family, someone is born in a rich family, someone is born in a poor family, someone is born healthy, someone is born crippled. These things are all by previous karma and by the arrangement of the Lord. So nothing happens by chance. And just like we might think Prahlad Maharaj shouldn't have been born in Hiranyakashipu's family, but by understanding the background, we understand that this is actually correct, suitable family. His consciousness was devoted to the Lord because of his father's chanting of Om Namo Narayanaya. Similarly, there may be other instances of personalities who appear to be born in a family which doesn't match their own consciousness, just like Kamsa. You know, Mahesh Ugrasena, he's a devotee of the Lord. Krishna had a quite intimate relationship with Mahesh Ugrasena. Once Kamsa was killed, Krishna immediately gave the kingdom to Mahesh Ugrasena, and even in Dwarka, Mahesh Ugrasena was officially the king, though Krishna was acting also as under him. But how is it that Kamsa was born from Mahesh Ugrasena? Such a great demon, such an enemy of Krishna. So this is also described how that took place, that actually Ugrasena was not the biological father of Kamsa. And this is described in the Padma Purana and quoted in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. How was Kamsa conceived? His mother, her name was Padmavati, so she had taken a visit to her father's house. So she was already married to Ugrasena, but she was visiting her father. At that time, one demoniac yaksha, he was attracted to her. So taking the form of Ugrasena, he had relations with her, and from that union, Kamsa was conceived. And it appears that Maharaj Ugrasena was not even aware of this. And there's different descriptions whether Padmavati was aware or not. Some places that say she was aware, and therefore she hated Kamsa because he was a product of her being taken advantage of by this yaksha person. But therefore Kamsa was of a different nature to Maharaj Ugrasena, and he was a sworn enemy of Krishna. Or also Maharaj Vena, we know in the fourth canto, there's the father of King Prithu was Maharaj Vena. He was also a very demoniac king. When he came to power, he stopped all sacrifices. He said, "I am the representative of the Lord, Naradeva. No need to worship Vishnu, you just worship me." And the Brahmins eventually became so frustrated by Maharaj Vena that they killed him by mantra. But Maharaj Vena's father was a very nice devotee of the Lord. So how is it that his son was the opposite? There is also explanation given that Sunita, the wife of Maharaj Anga, she was the daughter of death personified, daughter of Mrityu. So therefore, the son generally takes the nature of the mother, and the girl generally takes the nature of the father. So Vena took the nature of his mother, and his mother was daughter of death, therefore he took the nature of death also, nature of death personified. So he was very demoniac. He was killing his friends while they were playing. He was hunting animals, very cruel, and all the people were scared of him. So like this, what I'm trying to point out is that everything is very scientifically arranged. There's no chance who takes birth in which family, why someone in a demoniac family gives birth to a great devotee or vice versa. There's some explanation for this. It's not haphazard. Therefore, if one wants to have a Krishna conscious family, therefore one has to follow the process described in the scripture to attract such a soul. Another interesting story in this regard, which I heard many years back from Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj when he was giving a class in Vrindavan. It's a story from history of India more recently. Many of you may have heard of Maharaj Ranjit Singh. So he was the king of Punjab, I think in the 1800s or in the early British period. So he was a Sikh, but in those days there wasn't so much distinction Sikh and Hindu. They were more or less followers of Vedic culture. So as we know, even from Lord Ram's pastimes, the kings would send out spies to see what's going on in the kingdom. So Maharaj Ranjit Singh had his spies, and they would report to him any noteworthy events that took place that day. So one day Maharaj Ranjit Singh's spy came to him and told him of an incident that he had witnessed. So there was one mansion, some rich person had a big house, and they, in front of the house, to serve the cows, they had made a trough with water and fresh grass. So any cows wandering, stray cows, they can come there to drink and eat grass. So this was a pious go-seva that person was doing. So on this day, one cow had come and was drinking water from the trough, and as the cow was getting up, her horns got stuck in the fence. And both horns were stuck, and the cow was getting agitated, trying to extract herself. And then different people came around to try to help, try to extract the cow. So, as in India, when something happens, a lot of people gather and they have different suggestions. So some were saying, okay, let's break the fence, let's try to squeeze bend the head of the cow so the horns get loosened. And one person suggested, oh, we should just cut off the horns so then the cow can get off easily. So eventually that managed to somehow or other get the horns out of the fence and the cow was released. But the spy was struck that one person had suggested cutting off the horns of the cow, and this person appeared to be a Hindu. So he told Maharaj Ranjit Singh that this is what I witnessed today. So the king was also curious that how could a Hindu person who worships the cow even suggest of cutting off the horns of the cow. So he said, okay, you go find that person, bring him to me. There must be some explanation for this strange mentality of his. So when the man was brought before the king, he asked him, so is it that you're Hindu? How is it you're suggesting to cut off the horns of a cow? And that man said, I'm sorry, I'm Hindu, my mother is Hindu, my father is Hindu, I'm very sorry, I had this idea, please forgive me. So the Maharaj Ranjit Singh wasn't satisfied, so no, go call your mother, I want to know, how is this possible? So the mother of this man was brought to the court, and so he questioned her, how is it your son has this mentality that he thinks it's okay to cut off the horns of a cow, even for the cow's benefit? And she said, no, Maharaj, there's no, our family is pure, we have never, done anything that this should have happened. And she said, no, you think very carefully why this idea could have come in your son's head. Think about his conception or when you were pregnant. So then she thought back and said, well, actually when I conceived my son, the next morning when I looked out the window, the first thing I saw was a butcher passing by on the street. And immediately Maharaj Ranjit Singh said, yes, this is the explanation. You conceived your son and the first person you saw after that act was a butcher. So therefore that contamination of seeing the butcher early in the morning, that morning, has passed on to your son. And 30 years later, it's come out in this suggestion that he can, that cow's horns could be cut. So, you can just see how Vedic culture is so subtle. So one ending of the story is that, one version at least, is that the king made a proclamation that the ladies should all have a little mirror in their ring. So in the morning, to not see anything inauspicious, they should look at the ring and see themselves. Anyway, the principle is that in the morning, first thing when one wakes up, one should offer obeisances and think of Krishna. So the same principle is there, to avoid any inauspicious thoughts early in the morning. So like that, the science of pregnancy and childbirth is very, very scientific. And we're very fortunate that we have this knowledge given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And if we want to have a proper population of devotee children in our society, it behooves us to follow these standards very strictly. A couple more points I wanted to make. Another instance of, as in this verse Prabhupada says, it's hard to imagine how the baby in embryo could hear Narada. We know how Maharaj Parikshit also, when he was within the womb of his mother, he had darshan of Lord Vishnu. Ashwatthama had thrown the Brahmastra to kill Parikshit Maharaj, and the Lord personally entered within the womb of Uttara to protect Maharaj Parikshit. And it's described in the first canto how he counteracted the Brahmastra with his, I believe it was with his club. So from that time, within the womb, Maharaj Parikshit had darshan of Lord Krishna, and therefore he was always attracted to the Lord throughout his lifetime. And he was always searching out, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? And that's why his name is Pariksit. Pariksha means to examine, examination. So he was always searching out, where is that personality whom I saw within the womb? Because that image was so powerful, having darshan of the Lord within the womb, that memory stayed with him throughout his life. Also, Prabhupada talks in this purport about the progress in spiritual life cannot be obstructed by any material condition. Ahaitiki apratihata. So when I read that line, I was thinking of that book Salted Bread, which some of you may have read, which gives quite detailed descriptions of how the early devotees in the Soviet Union, they were persecuted and tortured very, very badly by the KGB and the police because of their taking up Krishna consciousness, and how these pioneering devotees, they had to tolerate, you know, all sorts of torture, given drugs, beaten, starved, really horrible, horrible torture they had to undergo. Quite similar to what Prahlad is going to be handed out by his father. And we know later on Prahlad is going to be tortured. Similarly, these devotees were tortured in so many ways, but they maintained their Krishna consciousness even under such extreme circumstances. So this is a great example. Sometimes we think that, Bhagavatam is thousands of years ago. Nowadays, Kali Yuga, we can't live up to these expectations. But even within our own lifetimes, we have examples of devotees who underwent such severe torture and still maintained their faith in Krishna consciousness. Some of them were even killed in the psychiatric hospitals in the Soviet Union. And finally, last point I wanted to make was one of Prabhupada's senior disciples, who we all know quite well, but I won't mention the name. He told Prabhupada once that when his mother was expecting him, her mother, means his grandmother, had told her, you better just get this child aborted. And so this is what he told Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, coming from such a pious Indian, high-class family, the sinfulness of the West was something quite incomprehensible to Prabhupada in the beginning, that someone could think that I'll kill the child within my womb. And Prabhupada was horrified to think of, all the different sinful activities that are going on under the guise of free living and pro-choice movement, abortion, pro-abortion movement. So all these different sinful activities are condemned very strongly in the Shastras, condemned by Srila Prabhupada. So therefore, we have to very strictly follow his instructions and the instructions of the Shastra, how to create good progeny within our society. So I'd like to end here, unless anyone has anything to add or any questions or comments. Yes, get to Nagari Prabhu.
The question I have is, you were telling so many stories, story after story, about things that had happened to people in their womb or right after their birth, or different outcomes that came about because of this. So none of us had any of these auspicious rituals performed. I mean, I didn't, for sure. And my father was an atheist. My mother was a very strict practicing Roman Catholic. So there was some religion there, but I'm saying none of the... So The question that rises in my mind is, then what do we do about it at this late date? I mean, I'm already 62, and it's like, you know, it's a little bit late to do anything about what happened at the time of my conception. But I'm just wondering, is there anything we can do about it to overcome the inauspiciousness?
Chant Hare Krishna. Yes, it's a good question. Ahoitiki apratihata, spiritual life cannot be checked by any material condition. So if one has had the benefit of practicing Krishna consciousness in a previous life, then he'll get the opportunity to be born in a devotee family and continue that. If one hasn't, then there are so many devotees who are preaching Krishna consciousness all around the world. Prabhupada came for that purpose. And he said, I've created your good fortune. He told his disciples, I've created your good fortune. So our Krishna consciousness can be taken up at any time. There's no, you know, use by date. It's never too late. If you were able to take it up at a young age, so much the better. You have so many less years of, contamination to overcome. But it's never too late. We see devotees taking up Krishna consciousness at all ages. But really for the grihasthas in our society who are planning to have children, these instructions are imperative. For others, coming to Krishna consciousness at a later age, by taking up devotional service with full enthusiasm following the process, then one can be very quickly purified, even if one's background is contaminated. Just like these children of the asuras, they don't have any great qualifications spiritually. In fact, the last line of the chapter summary, even without such assets, one can achieve devotional service through the mercy of a pure devotee. So by following the process of Krishna consciousness by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, one can be very quickly purified, even if one has had no earlier background.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. About those sanskaras you were talking about before conception, around during conception and even during pregnancy. So of course I have read that book Garbhadhan Samskar. I just glanced through it. So I mean, apart from that, is there any arrangement, I mean, either in Mayapur, here in Mayapur, by senior grihastha devotees to train grihasthas in understanding the samskaras and following them when they plan to have children?
Yeah, so we actually teach a course in Mayapur Academy on samskaras starting in November. And as you can see, I didn't choose the verse, but it was related, so therefore I tried to stress on these points. Because it's very, very important for the grihasthas to follow these standards. So, yeah, in that sense there is. And if you consult the senior devotees, they'll also give you advice. Prabhupada has given quite a lot of instructions on especially Garbhadhan Samskara. And there are other books. Gopal Bhatta Goswami has given Satkriya Sara Deepika. Some devotees, they don't have much knowledge and they think it's something very complicated and very technical and it doesn't work. But actually, it's the actual Samskara, Garbhadhan Samskara, even as given by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, is quite simple. You know, Prabhupada, he stressed we should chant, husband and wife should both chant 50 rounds. And if you add the actual ritual from the Satkriya Sara Deepika, there's a little bit of puja in the morning, there's a few mantras in the evening, offering some water and flowers to the deity. A few mantras, and that's actually it, as far as the actual ritual is concerned. So it's something very doable. There's no yajna, you know, you don't need to have a big show and dance. Simple thing. So on one hand, it's very simple. On the other hand, it takes a lot of preparation, preparing the consciousness, meditation, what kind of child you want to have, meditating on those qualities, getting the blessings of your spiritual master, the Vaishnavas. But the result is worth it, you know? Because you can just imagine Hiranyakashipu, how much disturbance he gave to the universe. And how was he conceived? We know the story, it's given earlier. His Diti was feeling upset that she doesn't have children. She went to her husband at the wrong time in the evening, and their union produced these two great demons. You know, so similarly, if the union is auspicious, then the children produced will be of a much better character. And then your raising them in Krishna consciousness will be much easier. Otherwise, you're going to be struggling. If you conceive them in a mode of passion, mode of ignorant manner, then the soul who came to you is going to be of that quality. And then what you try to teach them, sattva guna, Krishna consciousness, is going to be so much more struggle. But for your own benefit, if you want to have a peaceful family life, by performing the samskara, you're almost guaranteed to attract a soul who has those qualities, at least sattvic qualities, who has already practiced Krishna consciousness from a previous life. And then your raising them will be so much easier. So it's for your own benefit to follow the samskaras, makes a lot of sense.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Thank you so much for the wonderful class. Prabhuji, my question is, when Narad Muni was instructing Prahlad Maharaj in the womb, and Hiranyakashipu, he was undergoing austerities, I heard like 60,000 years. So how is it like that he was in the womb for 60,000 years?
That may be covered in the future. But it's also, one explanation I've heard is that everything is just multiplied in the previous ages, that it's a similar percentage. You know, if it's 10,000 years when they lived 100,000 years, it's like 10 years to our 100 years. That's one explanation I've heard for the timings. I don't particularly remember if it's mentioned how long Hiranyakashipu did his austerities. Maybe it was covered earlier. Actually, we know in the heavenly planets, the children would grow up immediately. Their conception and the pregnancy and the growing of the children would be almost instantaneous. They didn't have long pregnancies and they didn't have toddlers and young children. They're almost immediately, the demigod, when they have children, they're already fully grown. But it doesn't seem to be the case here with Hiranyakashipu, because Prahlad is a young child, he's growing up here. I don't know, does anyone have any clarification on that question? Because I don't actually remember how long Hiranyakashipu was doing his austerities. My just off the cuff answer would be that it was percentage-wise the same amount of time as a regular pregnancy. Someone has a comment?
My question is that when Prahlad Maharaj was telling his classmates about what he heard in the womb, it was against what they were learning, so why did they call it transcendental knowledge?
Why did they what?
Call it transcendental knowledge.
They were convinced by Prahlad. You know, he already gave them a whole chapter of instructions. Plus, he's also the prince, you know, so he's like the senior most, they look up to him, he's son of Hiranyakashipu. So naturally, they would take anything he says to be true. And it seems they're also quite intelligent. They're taking the instructions, they're asking questions here. That's the outcome of effective preaching, is that the audience is convinced. What happened later on, I'm not sure, because Chandanamarka came back and the story goes on how Prahlad was chastised by Hiranyakashipu. What happened to them later on, I'm not sure, but at least they had a good dose from Prahlad at that age. Of course, then Prahlad becomes king after Hiranyakashipu was killed, so we can imagine that he's only going to continue his devotional teachings to all the asuras. But Prabhu, you had some comment on the other?
Yeah, I think you mentioned that it was 26,000 years that Prahlad was in the womb, and in the future verses, you mentioned that
Just wait for the mic.
I heard in a lecture that it was 36,000 years that Prahlad Maharaj was there in the womb. And also in this chapter, in somewhere in the verse of the purport, Kayadu decides not to give birth to the child till the situation becomes favorable. So she decides to wait.
Hmm.
Somewhere in this chapter, I can't really point out the verse.
Yeah, Kayadu was, she was feeling
insecure,
so. Because Hiranyakashipu was gone and the demons had all been dispersed by the attack of the demigods. So therefore Narad Muni took her under his wing and instructed her. One of the verses here, it says that because a long time had passed, therefore Kayadu didn't recall so much the instructions of Narad Muni. In text 16, that's going to be described. She was mostly concerned about keeping Prahlad safe. Prahlad Maharaj's mother was more concerned with protecting the child in the womb and was very anxious to see her husband return. Therefore, she could not very seriously consider the sublime instructions of Narad Muni. But Prahlad did not forget them because of the blessings of Narad Muni. Anyway, hopefully these things will be discussed further as the chapter progresses. Since it's 9 o'clock, okay.
Just one comment, if I may. When it comes to the process of different people being born into this material world, especially early on in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when the universe is first created, there's tons of miraculous births. You know, Daksha gets born from the thumb of Lord Brahma. At first, there's not even a woman that's required. And then later on, the demigods, they have union with their wives, and then different species of life comes out.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got what appears to be a human shaped being, you know, having union with another human-shaped being, and then a bird will come out. So, I just, in my reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when it's describing births, in the Mahabharata too as well, I just, we gotta stop thinking in terms of human birth and gestation and the coming of a pregnancy and the coming out of a child circa Kali Yuga, 5,000 years in the middle of Kali Yuga. Births, at least according to the Shastra, births have there's many ways that people are born, and some of them are quite miraculous, and it's we have to stop thinking in terms of our own experience and start broadening our minds a little bit, that there may be other possible ways it could happen. That's all. That's the only comment I wanted to make.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Okay, thank you all very much. Guntaraj Mabhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Shri Prahlad Maharaj ki, Govindam.